Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Welcome to Mental Health Monday for another Monday. My name's Mick, and a really action-packed show for you today. There's lots going on, and has been going on the programme. Just to let you know, on Thursday of last week, me and producer Lizzie went down to London. We were nominated for the campaigning journalism category at the IRN News Awards, basically. So we were nominated. It was a national thing. We were in the top four. I mean, we didn't win. But we're all right with that, aren't we, Lizzie? Yeah, she's nodding. Yeah, we're okay with that one. The campaigning group that did win, by the way, and I'll give them credit because, you know, if you're going to lose, you may as well lose to a really good cause. They were about going, speaking to elderly people who live in your community and engaging with them, finding out what they like, finding out what they're into, talking to them, and also getting them signed up to things like arts classes, dance classes, and that kind of thing as well. So it was no shame losing out to them, I don't think. But good to see. At least the Mental Health Monday has been talked about on a national level, and thanks to everybody who supported the show so far. Right, my guest in the studio is from a project called the Lily Jo Project, and Lily Jo is with us in the studio. Great to see you.
Hi, good afternoon.
Thank you for your time. You've come down the M62. You're based in Manchester?
I'm based in Manchester, yeah, and love Liverpool. I've spent a bit of time in some schools here doing mental health lessons and that kind of thing, so really familiar with the city and really love it. Had a lovely breakfast this morning at Love Thy Neighbour.
Right.
Little shout out there.
You're making a day of it.
I'm such a tourist. Anyone that knows me knows that wherever I go, I end up just being the biggest tourist. So what an amazing place to come at the top of a tower. I don't think I've ever had an interview this high up before.
No,
so.
And the good thing is now I can still see that incredible view, but you've just got to stare.
I know,
at me.
I've got my back to it.
It's good to get you in the studio. One of the things, and one of the reasons I was keen to get you on, was obviously to talk about what you do, but also talk about the way that we give messages to young people about talking in regard to what our mental health is and how to sort of signs. I often think that sometimes there's a danger that if you just go, right, teachers, you teach mental health now, the teachers who are otherwise doing geography or history or science suddenly have to, you know, put on a different hat. But actually, you're quite cool. And
thanks.
And you're a singer-songwriter as
I
well.
I am, yeah.
So you've got that kind of like vibe going on that actually young people might actually listen to you.
Yeah, it's been really good actually. I kind of go into school, I introduce myself, I do a song, like all my music and all my songs are kind of focused about like well-being and mental health and loving yourself and knowing that you're special and unique and all those kinds of positive messages. So I'll sing a song, do a little inspirational talk about what that song was about, sing another song, do another talk, and then sometimes I do a bit more kind of formal lessons where we really get to the nitty-gritty of like how to look after your mental health and that kind of thing with like pens and paper. So two different ways of delivering the message, but both work really well. And I think it is true. Like if it was you just your teacher talking about it, it can just be a bit boring. But with some a special kind of guest coming in and sharing about kind of their own personal experiences and their music as well, I think that kind of is a little bit of a different USP.
I think so. I think one of the things as well with music is that sometimes if you went, and here's a mental health song, people would go, oh, hang on. But actually, virtually every single song is about how somebody is feeling about something or someone and how they are in their mind processing that information through music, right?
Yeah.
So there's a catharsism that comes through songwriting, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the songs that I wrote, so I spent some time, as a counsellor working in GP surgeries. And then after having my children, I decided I wanted to kind of start writing songs again. So it was a bit of a gap for me. It was like working as a counsellor professionally within the NHS, having my children and then going, oh no, I forgot that I absolutely need to write songs because songs help me, help my mental health, you know. Wrote some songs and started to get some kind of traction from it, which was really exciting. And did this big festival down south. I talked about mental health from the stage and just said, oh, you know, I was working as a counsellor and I wrote this song inspired by people that I'd met within the counselling room. And afterwards, the queue was massive. People wanted to talk to me and saying, thank you for what you said about mental health. And I thought, well, really, all I said was I worked as a counsellor. I didn't really say much about it. And that's where the idea for the Lily Jo Project came from, because it was like, okay, well, I can't spend an hour with each person who's telling me their incredible stories, but I can direct them to a website where they can find top tips, information, resources that can help them, guide them and put them on the right path towards their own mental health recovery and journey, you know?
So just tell us, in terms of a time frame then, so you left college, you done university and you
You're trying to figure out my age now.
No. I'm still waiting. You look far too young to have had this exciting life so far.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so 16 to 18, I was at college, did performing arts, loved it, singing, dancing, and acting every single day for 2 years. Who's not going to love that? Then went on to sort of, I didn't really have the confidence actually at that age to step out and have my own solo career. So I just kind of worked in a modelling agency, like, as an admin booker, you know, a model booker. So really, like, just didn't want to be in the limelight, really, even though I'd had all that training. Then set up my own business, which was totally about, like, putting artists out in clubs, bars, fashion shows, that kind of thing. Then had my son, who's now 10. You're working it out,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah.
You're working out the age. And then worked as a counsellor, retrained when I had him, because I was like, oh, I really want to do something that's like a little bit more stable and secure. So got a degree in counselling, and then started writing songs again when I had my daughter. So yeah,
32.
Oh, nearly.
Have I gone too old?
No, still too young.
All right, that's fine then.
Yeah. You were brave there.
See, whenever a man tells a woman how old he thinks, he's already reduced 3 to 5
years. No, I'm happy because you'd already said I didn't look old enough, so that's fine. Yeah, 34.
In terms of then, before you sort of made the comment on, you know, on stage about, you mm-hmm. know, mental health and counselling, were you aware that mental health was this thing that was this great, you know, not talked about thing, this thing that people were kind of afraid of raising in public, that they were afraid of raising as an issue?
Yeah, do you know, because I am a counsellor and was counselling, to me, mental health was so normal. And it was surprising that people were like, wow, you talked about it. You know, at the time, I was like, oh, well, I always talk about it every day. and it's there's such a stigma attached to it. And I think it is getting better. This was kind of 3 years ago now. It is getting better. And yeah, I didn't realise it was going to be such a need at the time at all. I just thought, oh, this is what the song's about. Like, I didn't have a plan to launch a big mental health resource at all. But what I thought was, wow, now I've got this platform in music. I can use the platform to talk about mental health. And it's had such a great response.
But isn't it great as well that people have sort of looked at you, and the reason that they've seen you is because they've seen you up on stage, or they found you online, and they've thought, oh, what's this about? Oh, this is music. But then there's a reason to then look into it. So you've normalised.
Yeah, that's what I'd really hope.
About mental health.
Exactly. I'd really hope that I've normalised it and eliminated the stigma attached to it, and actually just to speak out and say it's okay, and there's help available, and there's help out there, there's loads of it, including my website, but so much more. So yeah, that was always my mission. And really, from an early age, I always wanted to do something with my life that was going to inspire and ignite freedom in other people. So writing songs was that, but I didn't really realise it was going to have this very strong focus on mental health. It's just kind of happened that way, really.
The website, we'll mention it now, thelilyjoeproject.com, thelilyjoeproject.com. It's a very good website, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, I put our website to shame, this one, a little bit. Aww. With the amount of stuff that's on there. In terms of the topics, low mood, anxiety, self-harm, low self-esteem, eating disorders, childhood trauma, grief and loss. And then if you click on any of them, you get sort of extra information. And then some of them involve people sharing their stories as well. So how have you built that sort of network of individuals?
Yeah, do you know what? I just put it out on Facebook, to be honest with you. And I just said, hi, I'm thinking of setting up some kind of thing. I didn't really know what it was going to be. And I wondered if anyone would be willing to share their stories. And I was really kind of unsure if people would come forward, but people did. And that was really brave of them. And that's been really helpful, because then when one comes forward, another comes forward. And then now I have people saying all the time, can I write for your blog? I'd love to share my story. It's quite cathartic for people to be able to have that platform to share their story, you know?
So we were talking about grief on last week's podcast, which wasn't live on the radio show, but can still be listened to again on the Mental Health Monday podcast. Your section on grief and loss. When someone you love dies and you know that your life will never be the same again, you are likely to experience a range of physical and emotional reactions, even if the death you have experienced was expected. Some common physical reactions might include crying, fear, panic, headaches, restlessness, racing heart, trouble sleeping, feeling sick, feeling numb, stomach upset, feeling agitated, feeling irritable, aches and pains, and loss of appetite. There's more on there as well. Mm. But actually, that's a really good example of how, from a mental health point of view, it relates to a physical health point of view. Because actually, if you go on an NHS website because you have got stomach cramps or whatever it is, you will go, right, what could it possibly be? And just putting it there, people might go, oh, I've got three of them.
Yeah.
Maybe this is an issue for me. Or it confirms to them that actually the reason they are feeling a certain way is based on, you know, grief or loss or something that they've experienced. So just by having that list there, I think that's a brilliant benefit that, that people go, all right, that's me.
That could be me. And actually, I share my story on the grief and loss section because for me, I had a really big loss in my life, but it wasn't a death. And I think that's also important with grief and loss. So for me, it was the breakup of my parents. And that was like foundations, that everything that I'd kind of like looked to and built my life upon was kind of taken from me in some ways when they split up. So I had those feelings and those symptoms through that. And I think that's really important to note as well, that like grief isn't necessarily just about death. It's about losing your job. You can feel like that, you know, or as I said, a breakup, divorce, that kind of thing is all part of like losing things and losing people and losing part of yourself, really.
And in terms of young people as well, when they are learning that for the first time, be it at a young age because it's something that's gone on within the parents' home, or as you learn to deal with it as you get older as well, you've created this idea of the whirlpool of grief. And actually, that's a really interesting idea. My analogies on this program are always absolutely awful. They normally relate to football or something like that. But just explain what the whirlpool of grief is.
Yeah, so the whirlpool of grief is like you sat in your little boat, let's say, and you're bobbing along on the river of life and everything's relatively normal. Obviously, we have our ups and downs, but generally everything is relatively normal. And then at some point you find out about the loss or the tragedy or the trauma or the issue, and you drop down on your in your boat, I imagine it kind of into this waterfall of bereavement. And in the waterfall you can feel shock, numb, you can feel denial, like does this really happen? And then at some point you land in the whirlpool of grief, and some days you can be caught right up in the middle of it where things are really tough, you can't get out of bed, you don't want to see anybody or do anything. And then other days you can just be kind of around the outside of the whirlpool, so you can kind of get on with life relatively normally. You might have a moment in the day where you're thinking, oh, the loss has kind of come back, but then other days you can be back in the middle again. And then some days you can kind of feel washed up on the sand, where you kind of feel like you're having a bit of an emotional breakdown or depression sets in. Some days you can be washed up on the rocks, where you have physical symptoms, and then at some point the good news is that you get back in the river of life again. And at that point, that's when you've accepted the reality of the loss and you begin to reorganize and love again. And I think, and then you go obviously back down the river of life, and at some point again you have another loss or issue and you fall down the waterfall of bereavement. And the thing about the whirlpool of grief is that it can kind of take as long or as little as it takes for each step. Like, it's not like you're going to be in the waterfall for 2 years or you're going to be in the river for, it's all kind of dependent on what you've lost, who you've lost, and the impact that has on you.
The lilyjoeproject.com has got loads of different sections on it. It's a really good website to check out as well. And there'll be loads of different information. Some might not relate to you, others might, or people that you know or care about. The Lily, one L, I, one L, Y, Joe, J-O, project.com. Is that the best way of describing it?
Yeah, I always say Lily badly with one L, but there's actually two L's in Lily. So one at the beginning and one in the middle.
That's the website where you can find out some more information. In terms of when you speak to young people, obviously they, you know, we've come up with the analogy for grief. How far do you try and sort of say to young people, look, these are feelings that are out there. It's okay to have these feelings, without saying to them, this is what you should do when you get these feelings, that you empower young people to be able to sort of grab hold of these feelings or deal with or have the power and confidence to take them on, if you like, if they come your way?
Yeah, what I kind of, I go down the avenue of like preventative strategy. So here's a toolbox, guys, for you to dip into if you need it. Now, you might be sat here today and you do need this. You might be sat here today and it doesn't relate to you. You might be sat here today and your mate needs it, or your mum needs it, or your dad needs it at home. Just take what you can, because I guess it's really hard to learn this stuff if you're not going through it at that time. But what I kind of tend to leave with them is more strategies for daily living, and like kind of getting enough sleep and taking care of yourself and getting physically active and practicing relaxation and kind of connecting with other people. And I kind of leave them with these keys that they can kind of be checking in with themselves. Well, do they do that now? And are they doing that enough? Could they be doing more of that? Is that going to help them? So I kind of go down that avenue, really, preventative strategies, rather than, because I couldn't go through every single issue in a lesson like, are you self-harming? If you are, you should be doing this, this, this. It wouldn't work. It's more about like overall preventative emotional well-being, health.
I think that's such a key point, isn't it? Because whenever we talk about mental health, occasionally the naysayers through social media or other sort of outlets will say, there's no such thing as depression. You just need to pull yourself together. Or I've experienced grief and loss and I'm doing all right. Why aren't you doing all right? You know, people have that thing. Whereas actually, if they recognise that they might be in a good place from a mental health point of view, but why are they in a good place? And that might be based on their strategies. Then when they do face the problems in the future, they won't suddenly go, oh yeah, I was wrong. There is such thing as depression. Mm-hmm. They would go, oh, I was aware when I have positive mental health. Now I'm aware when my negative health is in a mental health is in a bad place.
Mm, yeah,
and it's about sort of cluing people up as to where those times will come.
Yeah, exactly. And when I used to do counselling on a one-to-one basis, I would sort of say like they'd say, "Oh well, I was fine then." I'd be like, "Well, what were you doing then?" And then they go, "Oh well, I was running every day at that point." Ah, okay, so you were employing exercise as a coping strategy. There you go. So could you maybe try exercise again once a week, twice a week, three times a week, build that back into your life? And different people react to different issues in different ways. We're all so unique, aren't we? So what works for one person might not work for another person, and we just have to be aware of that and just be kind to each other, really. You know, we all go through stuff, we all deal with things differently. Like obviously I've just mentioned the loss of my parents being together as a unit, but someone else might go through that and be absolutely fine with it, you know. So we're all different.
The Lily Jo Project is a brilliant website. People can find out more information on there as well. How much of yourself do you feel like you've given away, or how much of you did you feel yourself you had to open up about your own mental health when you were putting the project together?
I did feel like if I'm going to ask other people to talk about stuff, I need to talk about it too. I didn't feel like that was very fair, you know, to say what's your story and then not to share mine. So yeah, I do feel like I've given quite a lot of myself, but I also am happy to do that because I think that's a responsibility of someone who's putting themselves out on stage anyway, you know. And obviously, you know, there's social media, so I share my life on there quite a lot. And obviously there's times when I think, actually, I just want to not share anything today, and then I don't, and that's fine. So I'm very in control of like what I share and what I hold back. But I'm that kind of person who does like to be seen, like as in I want people to see who I am. I'm happy to share my age, that kind of thing. I'm happy to actually share who I am because I believe life is, every day is an experience and every day you can learn from it. So why not share what I've learned? And that's what the whole idea for the project was. It was like, I've got all this information in my head about mental health and how to deal with certain topics and subjects. It felt selfish to keep it to myself because obviously there's people out there that need to hear it. So that's why I put it all out there, spent good few months like writing it all, making sure it was kind of right and suitable. And I have a supervisor that as a counsellor you need to have supervision, so I have a supervisor and she ran through it all and made sure that it was all kind of right, and then we put it out. So yeah, we were funded to do it, which was amazing. Actually, an organisation called Seedbed gave us this seed money to start it, which was brilliant because obviously it was a lot of time on my behalf to make it live and to obviously get it created and to make it look good. I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of myself that I give away, but I'm also happy to do that because that's who I am.
Amanda says, great topic. I've only ever been real low and at a really bad place at one point in my life, but I know how I got there and I'm so lucky I didn't follow up on my thoughts. Some of us are more tough than others. We should always be kind to others because we never know what others are going through. And two kisses. I presume they're for you.
Ah, thanks.
Thank you for your thoughts on that one, Amanda. Facebook Live, we've got our live interview with Lily Jo in the studio. It's funny that you mentioned there about your age. I always notice with people when they talk about their age, when they talk about, oh, big birthday coming up. And like young people do it when they're like, oh, I'm going to be 25 soon. Yeah. And then you go, oh, get over it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then people do it as they go, oh, I'm going to be 40 next. And I always think, you know, basically that's lapse of the sun. That's all it is. Mm. We're literally just hurling around space and it's just as you go. But I always get a sense that it's based around like a regret. Mm. They think, oh, I'm going to be 40 or I'm going to be 50. And it's not the number, because actually the number doesn't really matter. Mm. But this idea that you should be somebody else at that point. And I often think that's quite a dangerous thing that people do, where they go, oh, I just thought my life would have been better.
Yeah.
And it's almost, there's no point thinking that at 39 and 364 days. It's what are you doing to be in a better place when you're 50 or you're 60, or by the time you come to retirement at the age of sort of 89 or whatever it is. But people have that thing about life and they don't really associate it, I don't think, with mental health. But I think it must be about mental health.
Yeah,
just how you perceive yourself and how you perceive value within your experiences that you've had in your life so far.
Yeah, so true, actually. I quite enjoy getting older. Because I'm like, oh, well, I've learned so much. But I think, I guess I'm trying to live my life in a way that is purposeful, you know. So I think if you're living with purpose and you know what you're doing and where you're going, you're not just going to a job every day where, I don't know, you're just working for the man and you're doing what you have to do to make a living. I think for me, I feel like I'm actually living with purpose and I'm doing what I feel like I'm meant to do with my life. So every year, every day and every year is like a new opportunity. Like, I just see it all as a bit of a breath of fresh air and like, what's in store for today and how can I embrace the day? And lo and behold, the day comes and great things happen. Because I think it's about your mindset and about being positive and about looking for good opportunities and believing for good opportunities, and then good opportunities seem to come.
Sure. But it's that thing, and we mentioned this on the program before, if you believe you've got a dead end job,
yeah,
in your mind you've decided that it's a dead end, that job.
Wow.
So you start, the narrative is that the only way out is to reverse and come back out and start again. Whereas actually, if you stop considering it to be a dead end job, you think, well, what could I achieve from this? Yeah. You might find it wasn't a dead end at all. You might find it was, you know, a dual carriageway. See, my analogies are rubbish.
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah, and actually, like, let's say it's a corridor and there's the door and that's the end. But then what's through the door? Like, what's on the other side? That's what we need to be kind of looking towards, isn't it? And I've just written a song, actually. It's off my new EP, which is out on the 13th of April. And it's called Great Unknown. And it's about stepping out of your comfort zone and going into something new. So I've just spent the last 2.5 years touring with a band all over the world as the vocalist, as well as doing my solo thing, but also just doing that as well. And there was just a point where I was like, I have to make a decision whether I stick with this band, which is still touring the world and it's great fun and getting paid to sing in front of big stages, you know, amazing. But I've got to make the decision, do I stick with this band or do I step out, take a bit of a risk and really go for it with what I'm doing with Lily Joe and the Lily Joe project. And obviously there was no salary waiting for me. And it was like, is this going to work? But it, honestly, I can't tell you how great it feels to step out and take a risk and do something that you've always dreamed of doing. And so I encourage anyone out there that is in that position where they're like, actually, can I take a risk? Or if it's just very tiny, small steps towards your dream and your goal and what you feel your purpose in life is, then start. Like, just start with that little first step.
The other sections on the website we touched on with some of the issues, grief and loss before. When you speak to young people, you go into schools, is there a particular theme which you notice comes back and back, one more than other, or a couple which always sort of spring forward as potential issues that young people are having to deal with at any given time?
Yeah, I think anxiety is a big one. So tomorrow I'm actually going into a school doing some exam stress workshops with year 11. So that's going to be quite fun, like kind of talking about how to get through your exams without stressing out too much. And so stress, anxiety, self-harm, which is really kind of a big topic that is very difficult to almost know why someone self-harms, many different reasons as to why they do. That comes up a lot. And actually, amazingly, one of my favourite stories is a girl came up to me in year 9 and she handed me her blades after the lesson that she used to cut. She had them with her in school. I mean,
so year 9, 12, 13?
Yeah, 13, 14. Handed them to me and said, I don't want to cut anymore. And for me, that was like, wow. That's why I do what I do. You know, for her, is that line in the sand moment where she goes, yeah, actually, I'm going to listen to what you've said and I want to really try. And some schools and some year groups have more of that kind of issue than others. In that school particularly, that was an issue within that year 9 group of girls. So I think there is a bit of copycat behaviour that goes on. Eating disorders, yeah, I think they're pretty prevalent in schools, especially among teenage girls. And anger as well can be a real issue. Hard though, because when you're a teenager, a lot of these things you're going through anyway because you've got all the hormones and all the other things going on. It's really difficult to kind of diagnose, has that teenager got an actual clinical mental health issue or is it their hormones? So I think it's such a hard time, adolescence, to really navigate that and know, especially as a parent, how to deal with that.
I think in terms of the work that you do, Lily Joe, fantastic in that, you know, you had that young person come to you with the blade, and you think, well, that person had the confidence to be able to say that to you because they had put their confidence in you and they felt that that was the right thing to do at that time. But presumably there would have been, you know, maybe other people within that class who maybe thought the same thing but didn't want to sort of say it publicly,
yeah,
if you like. So much of the work that's around positive mental health, we'll never see necessarily the rewards to it, and you won't always get those payoff moments.
No, I know.
If you like, but nevertheless, it's the groundwork that you put in might benefit them 3 years down the line, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, 20 years if they're then talking to their own kids, saying, "Well, why don't you try this? Why don't you try these exercises, meditation, or whatever it may be?"
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is just education and letting people know that there is ways and there are ways that you can deal with your mental health, and you know, it's just something that I didn't learn about in school. How about you? I don't know. Was it something that you learned? No. So it's not really in the curriculum necessarily to like manage your stress and your anxiety and what to do instead of self-harm. What else could you do? You know, there's not those alternatives. So I think what I'm doing is kind of raising awareness and saying, you know what, guys, there's another way out. There's another option. And anonymously, you can go onto my website after this lesson and you can have a look for yourself.
Lily Joe, thelilyjoeproject.com. It's interesting what you're saying there about young people and whether or not, you know, the hormones, the anger and everything that kicks in. I was listening to an interview with a Buddhist monk. He was saying that actually, you know, do Buddhist monks get angry? And they say, well, they do get angry. But what they do is they recognize that there is anger. So if they feel a certain way, they'll go, okay, right, there's anger in the room now. What can I do about it? And that's based around that knowledge of what your mental health is, how you react in certain situations. So you can see it as an outside source, as opposed to something which is something that defines you and something which will set your paths for the future.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's about being mindful, isn't it? Mindful of your own emotions and knowing, actually, in this moment now, I am feeling angry. How can I get rid of that anger? What can I do? And obviously, there's loads of things you can do in that moment to kind of calm down. And
there might be lots of parents off the back of this conversation telling their kids to go and check out the lilyjoeproject.com. If people want to sort of get in contact with you and schools want to invite you in, is it about contacting you and picking a date?
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah. So I've got a goal for the year. I want to get into 20 schools. And so far I've been in 5. So that's exciting. And yeah, they can just get in touch. There's a contact section on the website. That goes straight to my email. So please do get in touch and let me know your thoughts. I've also been doing some parenting workshops as well, which has been really cool. So again, if you're interested in that kind of thing, get in touch. Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. And there's also a link to your music on there as well.
Oh,
you mentioned it at the start. We've got, we can play a snippet of one of your tracks, actually.
Lovely.
Do you want to tell us about Unstoppable?
Yeah, so Unstoppable, I wrote with my good friend Philippa Hannah. She's a singer-songwriter. And we just kind of got together in the studio and I said, I want to write a song for girls and for guys and to encourage them that they can live their best life, they can live their unstoppable life. So that's what this is about.
Brilliant stuff, Lily Joe. Thank you for your time. It's been brilliant to get you on Mental Health Monday. TheLilyJoeProject.com if you want to find out more information about the work that she does. Here's Unstoppable.
Impossible to make it. Hoping, dreaming, praying someday it will work out. Uphill battle takes more strength than you can fathom. But it's not over. This is for the girls. Hey, it's time to be bold. Won't take no from anyone. This is for the guys. Oh, reaching for the stars. You are unstoppable. To get an education, raise the bar and shine the light to those around you, 'cause it's not over.
you are unstoppable. This is for the guys who are chasing status, doing the best to love the haters. Nothing's impossible, no.
Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
Okay, so it's Radio City Talk. It's Mental Health Monday. We're going to speak now with somebody who's from a children's charity, the Theodora Children's Charity. Her name is Emily Sword. She's the chief exec, the CEO. We're going to talk about one of the schemes that have got up and running. It's a national scheme, and hopefully it's going to make a real difference to young people, particularly young people who find themselves in hospital. Not the best place to be, but it might be improved with a visit from a giggle doctor. Emily joins us on the programme. Now, Emily, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Tell us about the idea behind a giggle doctor.
So the giggle doctors are professional performers that we train as Theodora Children's Charity trains them, and they visit children in hospitals all across England.
Tell us maybe what sort of situation those children might find themselves in, those who might get a visit from a giggle doctor.
Sure. Well, the giggle doctors will visit any child who wants to be visited. So when they arrive in the hospital, they get changed into their giggle doctor character. So we've got Dr. Bananas, Dr. Faffy, Dr. Hip Hap, all sorts of wonderful characters. And then they'll go and check in at the nurse's station and just check if there are any children that they feel would particularly benefit from a visit, or any that they perhaps shouldn't if they're about to go off to surgery or similar. And then the giggle doctors will then see the children individually. So it's one-to-one. And the idea is that it allows the child to actually have some control over the situation, and it gives them a bit of relief from the situation that they're in and gives them a chance to just be a child, to play and have some fun and just be silly. And the giggle doctors can really facilitate that. So they use magic, singing, music, comedy, anything really, anything that child needs. And they get to go on a wonderful adventure together, all at the bedside. And it just really transforms the mood for the children, and obviously if the family are there too, then it boosts everybody's mood.
Absolutely, and mood's a really important thing here, because we talk about maybe some of the illnesses that the children are facing, or if it's operations as well. People often say, you know, positive mind and that sort of thing, but if you are in a hospital for a long period of time and it's something which is maybe a recurring issue, I imagine that there's a risk for that child to suffer with problems that might be related either to boredom, or then the isolation that might come through, the idea of missing out on friends and things that they're getting involved in as well. And that factors on their mental health.
Absolutely. I mean, and just being in hospital, and you might not quite understand, depending on your age as a child, you might not understand all the words that are being used about what's going to be happening to you, or, you know, so those feelings of anxiety can be really acute, actually. And, you know, what we found is we've looked into this, and, you know, scientific studies have shown that laughter actually can boost mood and helps to connect people. So the visits from the giggle doctors are hugely beneficial in lots of ways. It might on the surface look like it's all just having a bit of fun, but there's you know, a much longer term impact for those children.
I imagine the parents think, thank goodness the giggle doctor is here, because if you've ever had a child who doesn't want to go somewhere or is apprehensive about something, being able to throw out the idea that there might be the giggle doctor there, the child then reacts and goes, oh, I remember that was a positive experience that I had.
Absolutely, you're spot on. I mean, we have parents say that they'll make sure they book their appointments on the day that they know the giggle doctors are going to be in, which is wonderful to hear.
I guess as well, I mean, what's your sort of, this is the wrong phrase, hit rate? How many children do you get to see over the course of a year?
Last year we saw 33,000 children across England.
Oh, that's a phenomenal number. That's a lot of smiling.
It is. It's a lot of smiles. And obviously we want to be able to bring more smiles to more children.
And in terms of what the work you've got going on from this year is running from the 19th to the 23rd of March, and people will have been experiencing these, the number of hospitals that you're visiting is fantastic. And they're national, aren't they? You're going all over the place to try and sort of spread that message.
Yes, we're in 21 hospitals, so as far south as Brighton, over in Bath, up in Leeds and Bradford, so all over, yeah.
And in terms of the long-term aims for this one as well, is this something that you're hoping to be able to make sure that either it's every children's ward or at least the opportunity that hospitals will get to invite you guys in? Because there's obviously a value in this.
Yes, our dream is for, you know, every child in hospital to have a Giggle Doctor visit if that's what they'd like. As a charity, we have to, you know, raise all the money that we need to be able to do that. So we're in 21 hospitals at the moment, but really the sky's the limit. We'd love to be able to visit more.
Absolutely. And in terms of the signs of this one, are any of the Giggle Doctors actual doctors?
They're not, no. They're all sort of entertainers, singers, magicians. And no, they're not medically trained.
Do you ever find that the hospital staff try, you know, a few magic tricks, you know, to try and use some of the skills that they've seen from the Giggle Doctor?
They do. And we work really closely with the hospitals, particularly the play teams in the hospitals who are, you know, specially trained in distraction and so on. And we've got a great relationship with them. And it's all about complementing the wonderful, amazing services that the NHS already offers. You know, we're able to just enhance that patient experience and contribute to a better patient, a better time in hospital for the patients.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you ever get those children who are just of that age where the sort of the silliness is starting to be a little bit uncool and they just have to work a little bit harder to make sure that the child then buys into the idea of the Giggle Doctor?
Oh yeah, teenagers. But it's fascinating to see that, you know, you might spot a teenager on the ward and you can see them trying to shrink and be like, oh, don't come over. I'm too cool for this. I don't want to know. And then actually they start listening and then you can see them really wanting to get involved. And the Giggle Doctors adapt to the age of the child. And, you know, with a teenager, they're more likely to maybe just sit and have a chat or might show them how to do a magic trick, you know, so they can then go back and impress their mates. And it's just, it's more about companionship then.
And I guess people would be picturing, you know, something like Patch Adams, if anyone's seen that film, but also, you know, some sort of heavily made up clown face. Is it as outlandish as that, or is it more subtle?
It's probably the opposite of that. Our Giggle Doctors, they wear white coats, so like an old-fashioned doctor's coat, but that have been customised to make them much more colourful and tie in with their Giggle Doctor character. They wear, you know, as much makeup as I do to go to work. And it's really important to us, actually, that they look approachable and they work in a calm and sensitive style. So they're very colourful and have got lots of exciting tricks and stickers and so on in their pockets. But we feel it's really important that they're also relatable for the children.
Absolutely. You're fundraising all the time for this one as well. Theodora Children's Charity. There's a website people can go to as well. Is that the best way to find out more information?
Absolutely. Go to our website or look for us on Twitter. Our handle is Give a Giggle.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you for your time, Emily. We really appreciate you coming on the programme. It's great to hear you're doing fantastic work, and it sounds as if that's something that's going to be long-standing as well, as long as people support it. So we'll point people in the direction of that, and we'll get all your details up on our social media too.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for having me.
That's Emily Swords, Chief Executive of Theodora Children's Charity. Loads of stuff that they've got up on social media and also on their website and their Giggle Doctor scheme, which sounds absolutely brilliant. You're listening to Mental Health Monday.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.